Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Beware the Board, a horror podcast where we watch a randomly selected horror movie every single week. I'm Bob.
And I'm Ben.
Hey, Ben.
Hello.
Are you excited?
I mean, you know, I've had a couple hours to let my excitement die off, so I'm just ready to be done with this season.
Damn.
I think.
Really?
Not that I didn't enjoy it, but like, new season, you know?
Yeah, new season is exciting, and I'm very excited to tell you my categories for next season. But before we get to the next season, we have to finish this one first.
Yeah, we're on the last movie episode, which is a true crime one.
It is the last spot is a true crime spot. But before we even get to that, Ben, there are so many things we need to do before we get there. Have you thought of a name for this season?
No, we'll figure that out in the next episode.
Oh, you don't have anything?
Not yet.
We made a joke at the start of the season about some Dennis Reynolds related.
We can't name it Dennis Reynolds.
Why not?
I think there might be some copyright issues, but also...
No.
No.
No, you're vetoing the Dennis.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, you can't say I didn't try. I didn't try very hard, but I did try. Okay. I don't have any news this week. I was looking at my usual places of sources of news, and there was nothing cool coming up that I'm really interested in talking about.
Fair enough, I guess.
So I guess we're going to skip straight to the podcast part of the podcast.
All right. Well, we're on episode 109, which is our last spot. So I'm just going to tell you.
Yeah, Ben, what are we watching today?
Today we're watching a film from 1983 entitled The Dead Zone.
Oh my God. Like the Stephen King movie?
Yes.
A book, I mean? I'm sorry.
Like the Stephen King book.
Doesn't this have, oh my God, what's his name?
You were doing his voice a lot at the convention.
No, I'm not doing his voice. Don't say that. That's not what's happening.
It was Christopher Walken.
It is Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken does
this
movie.
Yeah. This is one of my favorite Stephen King books.
So I was about to say, you've read this book and you really like it, so I'm excited.
Description. Sometimes there are consequences for surviving. It's an hour and 43 minutes long. It's rated R. IMDb gave it a 7.2 out of 10.
That's pretty good.
Tomato meter score of 89%.
Oh.
And an audience score of 77%.
Nice.
So pretty shocking for an 80s Stephen King movie.
Yeah. Well, considering Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah, but also other stuff. A lot of his early like movie adaptations were made for TV kind of stuff. For awards, it has 7 wins and 4 nominations. Notable actors. We have, first of all, Christopher Walken as Johnny Smith, so our main character. Not sure how much I like that choice, but...
It's a choice.
It is an iconic one. He also played Wilbur Turnblad in Hairspray, the 2007 adaptation. Martin Sheen as Greg Stilson. Yes, Martin Sheen is in this movie.
Yeah, didn't know that.
He also played Captain Benjamin L. Willard in Apocalypse Now.
I've heard that movie's good.
It is. It's just an adaptation of Heart of Darkness, I believe. Brooke Adams as Sarah Bracknell. She played Elizabeth Driscoll in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the 70s movie. Not the original. Tom Skerritt as Sheriff George Bannerman. He was Dallas in Alien.
Oh.
The captain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Herbert Lom as Dr. Sam Wyzak. He was Charles Dreyfus in the Pink Panther franchise. So he was on there between 1975 and 93. A couple different movies. Anthony Zerb as Roger Stewart. He was Matthias in The Omega Man. Colleen Dewhurst as Henrietta Dodd. She was Marilla Cuthbert from Anne of Green Gables. She was on 2 episodes in 1985. Nicholas Campbell as Frank Dodd. He played Dominic Da Vinci from Da Vinci's Inquest. He was on 91 episodes between 1998 and 2004. Simon Craig as Chris Stewart. He was Mick in Concrete Angels. Geza Kovacs as Sonny Elliman. They were Agent Terzansky in The Sentinel. Sean Sullivan as Herb Smith. He was Dr. Bill Michaels in 2001 A Space Odyssey. Jackie Burroughs as Vera Smith. They were Hedy King from Avonlea. They were on 90 episodes between 1990 and 1996. Barry Flatman as Walt Bracknell. They were Mr. Palomino in Just Friends. Peter Dvorsky as Dardis. They were Harlan in Videodrome. And finally, Leslie Carlson as Brenner. They were Barry Convex from Videodrome.
It's a long list.
With some stars in it.
Yeah, I was about to say, some famous people.
Director, David Cronenberg.
Oh, that's disgusting. What? That makes so much more sense now.
Yeah, with the video drum actors.
Well, hold on. I'm going to ask this right now before we get any further.
You'll be fine.
Okay.
It's not like a body horror film because he didn't write this in the same way he wrote directed video drum. He just directed it. But he also directed The Fly.
Yep.
Which is also a remake. Writers Jeffrey Boehm. He wrote Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Oh.
Probably the best Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right.
Budget is estimated at $10 million with a box office turnout of 20.7.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Country of origin, United States. Also known as, this is the complete title, Stephen King's The Dead Zone.
Wow.
Wow. I am going to save the tagline.
Till after the movie?
Till after the movie.
Okay. I'll try to remember to tell you.
It tells you what this movie's about. Mm. I'm pretty sure you don't really know.
So I vaguely know.
Better to wait, I'd say. So this film premiered, was planned for the Toronto International Film Festival, but apparently 3 days before showing, Paramount removed it, and because the studio didn't want negative reviews 6 weeks before the film's theatrical release. So off to a rough start for release for this film.
That sucks.
Right away. And this kind of leads into the fact that, you know, this movie doesn't have a great box office.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 times its budget, which is good, but it's not great.
Yeah.
And Cronenberg has stated that he thinks the film's like box office failure was due primarily to poor distribution on the front of, I believe, Paramount. His theory behind that, you know, besides living through it, is that it might have been due to David Rose, who was the head of marketing at Paramount during the film's run, misappropriating marketing funds, especially since he was arrested for embezzling money.
Wow. Shortly after. That makes a lot of sense.
And if you want to really get into how bad this film had it, it should be noted that Cronenberg showed his own Dolby Stereo version of the film in Toronto for a month because no one else was showing it. And he was actually able to break even without counting concession sales, just on like ticket sales for the movie.
Oh my God.
Which is fairly impressive.
Well, what's crazy is like, it seems like it's well liked. Like people who did see it liked it. So why was it not successful?
Yeah. Otherwise? Thought I should start with that when we talk facts, because, you know, this movie isn't as well known as I think it probably should be, especially amongst all his other 80s movies.
I was about to say, being a Stephen King adaptation alone gives you some like,
some hype.
Yeah.
And it's a Cronenberg feature.
And also a bunch of famous people are in it.
Yeah. In either case, shooting started in early January 1983, took place in the Greater Toronto area and the regional municipality of Niagara. Apparently, it was so cold when the movie was filmed, because it was filmed during a deep freeze, which made it rough to do.
Sure.
Great for outdoor shots if you want like snow on the ground, but cold. Canada cold, not normal people cold, or, you know, American South cold. Originally, Lorimar Film Entertainment purchased the rights to this movie, but after closing their film division, the rights were sold to a person we've talked about a couple times on this show, Dino De Laurentiis.
Oh my God, he's back.
I bring this up because he apparently did not like the original screenplay written by Boehm, the writer of this film. It apparently asked Stephen King to write it instead.
Oh my God.
And this version of the script was eventually turned down by Cronenberg due to thinking it was, and I'm just going to keep this as brief as I can, needlessly brutal and the worst one by far.
Oh my God.
Laurentiis would also have like a couple other people write the script because, again, he wasn't happy with the Boehm one. So there was a bunch of different versions of it. Another version of the script he requested was written by, don't know how to say this name, Andrzej Zlowski, and that one was also not used. I didn't write down this, so I'm kind of going off of memory here. I believe he was like a Polish writer.
Hmm. He had them write multiple versions of the script and then use the original one that he started with?
Well, Cronenberg went with the original one.
Oh, okay.
Just because he liked that one the best. But they did do a couple changes to it. There was, I think, some issues with that script when he got it. But yeah, it was effectively, I think, the best one out of the batch. So, going back into Cronenberg, this film, The Dead Zone, was actually his first film in which he did not have any involvement in the writing of the script.
Mm.
And it was also his first film that did not have any Canadian content, because Cronenberg likes to feature Canada and all his stuff.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because I believe he's Canadian.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
Other things. Before Christopher Walken was cast as Johnny Smith, they did consider a couple other people. Apparently, Bill Murray was also considered
Jesus
for the role.
Jesus Christ.
As that was King's first choice. I'm not sure where we got Bill Murray and Christopher Walken from, but
I don't know.
Those are choices. It's also the first Cronenberg film since The Brood, so in 1997, to not feature Howard Shore as the composer.
Oh.
Which The Brood is also a fun movie.
We'll get there.
Fun movie for me, not a fun movie for Bob, probably.
There it is.
As with most Cronenberg stuff. I think the last thing to note is, you know, there hasn't been a remake of this film as far as I'm aware, but the novel also inspired a television series of the same name in the early 2000s, starring Anthony Michael Hall, the pilot episode of which borrowed some ideas and changes used in the 1983 film.
Hmm.
So the one we're watching today. And then obviously this film is based on the 1979 novel of the same title by Stephen King. I think it should be noted that a large number of things differ from the book, both due to movie length, but also how long the book is, because the book's fairly long.
The book's really long. It's one of his longer books.
So if you like the movie or you're interested in it, I'd recommend reading the book. I think the book's really good.
I've heard the book's really good. Oh, we talked about it last week, I think. But when I was at those Peddler's Malls, so many Stephen King books.
Oh, yeah.
Books I'd never even heard of.
Because he's written like a bajillion.
Like millions of novels. It's insane. Bro cannot stop writing.
That's all I got for now.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll see you all after the movie.
See you in a bit.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. We just finished watching The Dead Zone.
Yep. What do you think, Bob?
Okay, look. I don't want to say it's a bad movie, because I don't think it is a bad movie.
No, objectively, I don't think it is.
Objectively, I think it's fine. But it is so, like, nothing. Like, nothing happens.
It's a very slow film.
It's so slow. And, like, most of the time, that's fine. But, and we'll get into it. This movie definitely feels like a lot of things thrown into a film without thinking about their repercussions. In some ways, if that makes sense.
That's interesting. We'll talk about that when we get into it, because I don't know what you're trying to say explicitly. Yeah, I guess we'll do our usual thing then. I'll give a brief rundown of this film, and then we'll get into talking about it and spoilers. What this film is about, it's about this guy, Johnny Smith, I believe his name is.
It is his name.
And he gets into a traumatic car accident, and afterwards he has the ability to like see things he wasn't there for when he touches something. I believe it's what? Psychometry?
Oh, I don't know what the term for it is, yeah.
But like if he touches someone, he could see like the past or the present or the future in relation to them. And kind of it's about his life after the accident. With that being said, we recommend you go watch the movie before listening to spoilers. Mm-hmm. As always, that's probably a good idea. We're reading the book. The book is pretty good. With that being said, we are going to get into it. Now, do you want to start with that thought process you were having?
Yeah, okay. So look, the whole point of this movie is that I guess it's supposed to be like a character piece about Johnny and his like life and the repercussions of him having these newfound psychic powers or whatever.
Yeah.
And very explicitly in the film, a lot of the time what he sees is how someone's going to die. That is what he's shown when he like touches people. And my thing is, this is in the true crime category, which I thought was very, very funny. It was kind of like a funny way to sneak this movie in.
Yeah, it was.
And a part of that, the reason it's in that category is because Johnny, like, helps the cops find killers, basically, using this newfound powers he has. And at the beginning of the film, you're set up to, like, what is it? The Castle Rock Killer, I think is what they're calling this guy?
Yeah.
And, like, Johnny's, like, helping the cops, like, investigate that. And you're kind of set up to think, like, oh, this is probably the rest of the movie. Not true whatsoever. It is not even close to the rest of the movie. But I think that's kind of where my issue with this film comes from, is it's a lot of individual stories that are loosely tied together because Johnny is around for them and like a part of them. But I want more of a solid through line other than just Johnny. You know what I mean? Like I feel like there could be more of a story here if there had been more setup in the earlier parts of the film to set up the, because I think the end of this movie is really good, but I want more of that setup at the beginning of the film.
That's fair. And look, I think there is a through line. I think it's this idea that Johnny's coming to terms with his ability.
Sure.
And realizing it's not so much a curse as a blessing. But kind of the issue, I think, with this movie, at least rewatching it, because I haven't seen this movie since I first watched it, which was, at this point, I think over a decade ago. But there is a lot of detail left out of the book. In fact, I would say this movie actually does a pretty good job adapting the source material. It keeps all the big points, but it loses a lot of detail from, like, Johnny's visions and stuff like that, that I think really helps the book be as, and I do mean this very explicitly, super, super dark and morbid. And I think that's what we're missing to make the story work, unfortunately.
Because, like, I think overall, it's a good movie. Like, I like a lot of the individual, like, stories and plot points. I think Christopher Walken does a really good job.
Yeah, he does. It's one of those unfortunate things with Christopher Walken where I have trouble taking him seriously.
Yeah.
Because it's Christopher Walken, and he just, he sounds very particular. But his performance is great.
It's really, really good.
Johnny wakes up from a coma after 5 years, and he has, like, some severe damage done to his body because of it. And so Christopher Walken's walking around with the limp, essentially, the whole movie.
He's a cane the whole film, basically.
And he does a great job acting it out. Even in scenes where, like, he's sitting down or way in the distance, you can see it actively at work. Yeah, and I mean, I think that's kind of a good lead into the fact that I think this film has a lot of good points.
Yeah.
You know, outside of that performance, I think it's very well shot. The soundtrack is pretty good.
The soundtrack is, I actually really like the music a lot.
They use it in a very dramatic leading sort of way. The area looks pretty. I think most of the performances are great. Like, I think Cronenberg and everything do a great job with the movie. It's just one of those hard things. I don't think it translates well.
Yeah. And I could definitely see how a book could translate what the story is trying to do in a much, much cleaner way.
Yeah. And again, it comes down to the fact that so much of the book is the fine details in comparison to the movie.
Well, I'm sure in the book you get a lot more of Johnny's visions, too.
You do. And they are very dark because he gets a lot of detail. Like, he's there for it. For instance, the Castle Rock killer, who had been active while Johnny was in his coma for 5 years. We didn't really mention that, but after the accident, he's in a coma. And Johnny ends up trying to help in the investigation, and he sees some of, like, the killer's acts. And in the book, those are very detailed. For instance, they don't have any way to figure out who the killer is, which is why they came to Johnny, because they aren't getting, like, any DNA evidence and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's because the guy's wearing, like, a rain slicker, and it gets into pretty morbid detail with all that. And then sometimes the movie would skip, like, whole visions entirely.
Yeah.
For instance, Johnny touches the mom, and in the book he gets a really, really fucked up vision from that.
Really?
But in this movie, they kind of skip over it entirely.
Well, it's implied that he gets a vision, because he, like, responds as if he got a vision, but we don't actually get to see what it is.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff like that missing. Again, I think it's a good adaptation for what the movie ended up being. But a lot of that detail is what I thought made the book really good.
I will say, it's not like they didn't try to include that level of detail, but it's just really difficult. Like, I think one of my favorite scenes that has to do with Johnny getting a vision is when they're trying to figure out who the Castle Rock killer is, and Johnny touches, like, a freshly dead body. He gets a vision of the killer, and he's, like, stunned and standing there in front of the sheriff, and he's just saying, like, I watched her die, and I didn't do anything, because I guess for him, it feels like he's really there, like he's actually experiencing it, which makes sense on why he acts the way he does when people try to touch him. And he's sort of, like, cagey about it. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I honestly think the way they did the visions that we got to see, and I think there's only, like, three or four of them in the horror movie.
Like, four,
I think maybe. There's four. It's really well done, because it's not just, like, okay, we're going to play a scene for the audience. It does that once or twice, but it's instead, like, Johnny's in the moment, and we get to see, like, him panicking in the vision overlaid with him panicking in real life.
And they do a really good job of, like, setting the scenes. So, like, where are they at? They're in, like, one of them is in, like, a hospital room.
Yeah. And he's laying down on a bed.
Yeah.
And so in the vision, he's also laying down on a bed, which is really cool.
But, like, basically camera tricks to make it look like you're watching the vision, and then it'll cut to Johnny in the moment in the same space. But the thing that isn't... It's really cool. They do a really good job of meshing reality with, like, the weird vision stuff.
Yeah, honestly, I think it was handled really well. It's beyond what I'd expect.
It's really good. It's really, really good.
Because I think the easy out is just to show something to the audience.
Yeah.
Which they do, I'll say, at the very end for the last vision. And it's not as effective.
It's not as effective, but I think in that moment, you shouldn't really be focused on the vision, but on the outcome of what's happening
around it. On the information given. Yeah. But definitely well done there. But I do think the movie is rough around the edges in places. Bob made this point a couple times, but some of the dialogue's a little bit funky.
Some of it is so funny.
I think it's a translation over from, like, maybe book dialogue.
Maybe?
To movie dialogue.
But even then, some of that dialogue I could not see in a book.
But some of it's just kind of funny 80s cheesiness. And you know what? That's fine. It was fun. I think my favorite line was, what is it? Hi, I'm Greg Stilson.
That got me good.
Which is Martin Sheen's character, and it's just over the top.
Or someone says, like, what is it? Someone goes, you're outside? And he just goes, I am. And that was really, really funny.
Yeah, and there is some awkward moments in the film like that. Not even just with, like, dialogue, but just kind of what's happening. I said this earlier, that the film's really slow. But because we're missing a lot of, like, the introspection stuff and, like, all the details, we have moments that feel very nothing in between very exciting moments. Or just, like, they're important moments, but it feels like they could have been skipped over a little bit. So the best example I have of that is at one point the sheriff comes to Johnny's house to kind of invite him to go to Castle Rock to help out with the case. And, like, that whole sequence there is the transition scene, but it's just so nothing. Besides introducing this character, that it's a bit awkward.
Yeah.
Because after that, we have the Castle Rock part of the film. And before that, we have, Johnny just reacting to his psychic powers, just getting them at the hospital.
And both of those outside scenes feel very, like, important and story-based. And then the middle part just feels kind of flat. And, like, it feels like there's just, like, it really, really hard to transition from, like, situation to situation without forcing it and, like, spoon-feeding it. Which sucks, because, like, if we're going to look at this as, like, something as a character piece, the transitions have to feel natural and feel like Johnny's living his life, unless, like, we're hitting the beats of a story, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, and again, I think that's because they cut out a lot of stuff to definitely make the movie smoother than it would have otherwise been. Yeah, because there's just a lot of missing stuff that covers that, like, interim parts of the film. I mean, by the time the Castle Rock stuff happens, we're about halfway into the movie, about, like, 45 minutes, an hour. And, you know, we're also about that length into a book that's about 500 pages. So there's been about 250 pages just dealing with Johnny getting his powers. You know, you just miss a lot because of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't even mention it. Johnny has severe brain damage.
Oh, really?
In the book, yeah. If I'm remembering right, I think a piece of his skull gets, like, shot into his brain.
Oh my god, what the fuck?
And it's actually, he has brain damage, so he's missing, like, certain things in his mind, and that's where the Dead Zone title comes from, rather than in this movie they use it as a implication that he can change the future. It's more that he just doesn't see things sometimes because his noodle's a little scrambled.
Yeah. Getting hit by an 18-wheeler will do that to you.
Yeah, they also gloss over how messed up he was.
Yeah,
I mean, I think the limp is a good way to show that, but again, They really do everything, I think, very quickly.
This movie is like an hour and 45 minutes, which I guess is a little long for some people. But honestly, I feel like it could do with like a 2-hour cut. Or yeah, a 2.5-hour cut. Where we just get all of that detail and stuff sort of tried to work in and make it more fluid. Because I feel like if the movie had that, it wouldn't feel as slow. Which means you could run it longer because it wouldn't feel as slow. And you would get a lot more of the stuff would make more sense on a single watch through. Because there's a lot of stuff in this movie that, like, as someone who's never read the book, I watched and went, well, why did that happen?
That's fair.
Like, why are we here now? How long has it been? There's a time skip? Why didn't anyone? Like, there's just lots of, like, weird, janky stuff in this movie that could be smoother and hurts it. Because overall, I think it works, could be a lot better.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of an issue of, like, the time this movie came out. I mean, an hour and 40-minute movie for the 80s is very long. Not necessarily any more because of streaming and everything, but this was a pretty long movie at the time. And, well, I think they did a good adaptation with the time they had. I think you are right that it could have been better if they had more time. Honestly, I think it would work better as a, maybe not even a movie, but like a miniseries or something.
Yeah, with like hour-long episodes.
Maybe it's like 4 or 5. Just to give a lot more detail and a lot more depth into like the problems Johnny's experiencing.
Well, I also think this would solve my problem of making it feel like it. This movie feels very incohesive in a lot of ways to me, but like if it were a miniseries, you could do, here's an episode just about this part of like Johnny's life.
That's
and then
fair.
It would have an end, and then the next episode would start, and then you could tie them all together by having it be a series. And I think that could really work. Because, like I was saying, there's 20 minutes of good content where I'm like, oh, this is interesting. Like, I like this Johnny character. I like what he's up to. I like what he's doing. Then 10 to 15 minutes of them trying to transition to a new thing, and then the new thing just starts anyway without having any actual leap through. And I think that that sucks and makes a movie that is physically long feel way longer.
That's fair. And again, I think this is interesting to hear from you because, like, you don't have the background of the book to go off of, which I think makes it a little bit of an easier watch.
That's fair.
But yeah, I do remember it being a bit long the first time I watched it.
Yeah. Also, we haven't talked about this. This is not a horror movie. I mean, it is, but it isn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, again, I hadn't seen it in a while. So when I was remembering it, I was remembering a lot of stuff from the book.
Oh, my God.
And the book's a lot more
messed up
because you get a lot more detail.
Yeah, the movie's not very scary.
But yeah, the movie's fairly low on gore and stuff. It's not very scary.
The closest we could get to like horror is like it has a supernatural element in that Johnny has like psychic powers.
And the kills that we do get to see are graphic.
Yeah, which is only like 2.
Yeah, but no, it's more of like a, I don't know, I'd say a suspense thriller character piece.
Yeah.
Which isn't bad, but...
But if we had gotten more psychic interaction Johnny stuff, maybe it would have been more of a horror movie.
Yeah. So, my bad on that.
No, it's
fine. I was thinking it was more like the book.
I just put it out there because it's been a long time since we've watched a movie and I just went, that's not really a horror movie.
Fair enough. What we also haven't mentioned is some of the background stuff. First of all, Johnny's having this whole relationship thing going on.
Oh my God.
With his girlfriend, ex-girlfriend. What's her name? Sarah, I think.
Yeah.
It's kind of an important part of the story, but essentially he's pretty involved with someone before his accident. And then, you know, 5 years have gone on and she's moved on. But obviously he hasn't because it's been like no time for him.
It's been 20 minutes.
So that's kind of like an interesting through for the whole piece. I don't know if you like that at all.
I do like it, but I wish it was more of a focus if it was going to be as... This is, once again, I'm going to repeat myself. There's lots of individual pieces that are good and I like, but there's not enough of any of them to make it work. There's like a decent amount, but it doesn't feel like any one thing is pertinent to the entire story, only portions of it. You know what I mean? It's like I have all these individual little pieces, but the puzzle just won't fit together right because there's not the right size of anything.
That's fair. It's one of those sequences in the movie, and I think somewhat in the book it feels very accurate to real life.
Oh, for sure.
But especially watching it on camera, it feels very awkward.
Yeah, absolutely. I get it.
Unfortunately, which kind of sucks, but I do think it was an interesting inclusion. It definitely brings out more heart in the characters.
Oh, yeah.
And then the other thing, which we haven't mentioned at all, and I do think is important to note, is that there's like this whole background going on about this guy running for U.S. Senate. His name's Greg Stilson.
I wish this was the main plot, by the way, because this is incredibly interesting.
It makes up the back half of the film, and I'm not going to get too much into it because I don't want to spoil the book if you plan on reading it or the movie. But I think what's so interesting about that is this was made during like the Reagan administration. Mm-hmm. I think he just got elected.
This came out in 1979, like the book did, I mean.
Yeah, the book came out in 1979. The writer, I believe I was doing research, he, like, turned in the script like the day Reagan got elected.
Oh my God.
So Greg Stilson feels like a nice little time capsule of like the political landscape at that time. And I just think it's really interesting.
It is interesting.
Because it's woven into the background of this film for the first half before it becomes like a main feature mm-hmm. in the back. And I just think that's really cool.
Yeah.
It's one of the more effective parts of this movie, I'd say.
Oh, yeah. And that's what I was just mentioning a second ago. Was like, I like all that Greg Stilson stuff, and I like when that becomes the forefront of the plot because I think it's interesting, and I wish we had gotten more set up for that at the beginning of the movie because then it would make the beginning feel like it has more payoff rather than just sort of being a Johnny piece, which I don't mind, but it's not, it doesn't feel like we're going anywhere.
So would you say the first half was weaker than the second half?
Oh, for sure.
Okay. I think, again, part of that is that the first half of the book focuses on, like, internal stuff and, like, how this is affecting Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
And then the back half of the book focuses more on, like, how Johnny starts to affect the world around him. And because of how that translated on screen, when he's affecting the world around him, that's more interesting for us as a visual audience. That being said, do you have anything else about this film? Kind of one of those hard ones to talk about.
Yeah. It is really hard to talk about, but I think I'm okay.
It's a good style film, but not a lot happens in it.
That's totally fair.
All right, then. I guess you want to give it a recommendation?
Sure. I mean, if you like Stephen King, this is one of his most famous books, so check out the movie. I've not read the book, but according to Ben, it's an okay adaptation.
Yeah, again, it cuts out a lot of the detail, but all the big beats are there.
If you like Christopher Walken, I think he does a great job in this movie. He's really, really good. Yeah, I like him a lot.
He does amazing.
I've not seen another Cronenberg film, but this is directed by Cronenberg. So if you want something that's not body horror-y from Cronenberg, this is a good option.
More palatable version of Cronenberg.
Much more palatable than something like, I don't know, The Fly.
Videodrome.
Movies I haven't seen because I'm too scared to watch them. I think that's it.
All right. I have similar ones for Bob. If you're a fan of Stephen King or Cronenberg, I think this is a good feature to check out. It's associated with both of them. And while it's not like my favorite Stephen King adaptation or my favorite Cronenberg movie, I do think it is worth a watch if you're a fan of either one of them, especially if you're a fan of the book. If you're a fan of anyone who's in this film, I think most of the actors do a good job. We've talked about Christopher Walken, but the actress who plays Sarah, and I forget her name, also does a really good job.
Yeah.
It was funny seeing her in this movie because the other way I really know her is Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of cool. But I think also if you just want a bit of like a psychic murder mystery film, this is pretty cool. I can't imagine that was a very common thing back in the 80s. You know, nowadays it feels a bit overdone. I mean, there was TV shows like Psych and stuff.
Yeah.
But it definitely feels fairly unique for the time period, and I think that's kind of cool to see in a film. With that being said, you want to rate it?
Yeah, I'm in a weird, weird spot. I don't dislike the movie. I just think it's sort of boring and rough around the edges a little bit. But overall, I think it really achieves what it wants to do. But I do think there are a couple things that need work. Three and a half? Yeah, 3.5. Because I'm giving it the extra half point because I don't know how far you could really take a book like this into a movie, and I think they did the best they could. And I think that's why it gets the extra half point for me.
That's fair. I guess for me then, I'm going to give it a little bit higher at a 4. And I think I'm kind of in that same boat as Bob, where it's not like the perfect movie. It's definitely very slow, and I think that can be very boring at times, but I think all the execution is really well done, and more importantly, I think as far as book adaptations go, while it's not the greatest for the amount of time they had, like lengthwise, and just the subject material, I think they did a pretty good job while also maintaining an R rating, I guess. What is this rated?
I think it's rated R.
Yeah, so maintaining that rating, keeping it as much detail as they could. I think they did an okay job with it. So I'm going to give it a 4.
That's fair. I guess that seeing the book probably also helped.
It definitely helps a lot because you're like, oh, I know what's happening.
Yeah. Now I kind of want to read it. Because you said it's only, what, like 550 pages? 450?
I think it's 448 or something.
That's not bad at all.
No, for a Stephen King book.
No, yeah, when you have something like The Stand, that's literally 1,000 pages.
The Stand is also really good.
I've heard it's really good.
Especially the first half. Second half, it's okay. But I really, really like the first half. I guess with that being said, outtakes maybe?
I don't know what's in there.
I don't think we're really going to have any.
Yeah. This movie is too serious and like slow and somber to like have, like, there's no big reactions. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was nothing.
But
we were yapping about nonsense.
Yeah. We'll be back in a minute.
Yeah. We'll see you guys in a minute. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the outtakes. Do we have any announcements? Ben.
Well, this was the last movie spot for this season.
Oh, it was. It was the last movie spot.
Next week is the wrap-up, and then on that episode, we're going to be announcing like our categories for next season. So, I know it's not the most interesting episode, generally, but it's worth checking it out if you want an advanced look at categories for next season. Otherwise, you know, we got holiday episodes coming out.
Yeah. I think Thanksgiving is out as of this coming out, right?
I think this came out the day after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So, you know, right now we have Christmas and New Year's to look forward to for the rest of the year. So check those out when you get a chance. Those will come out in December.
I'm actually so excited for Christmas this year, by the way.
How come?
Because I don't know what we're going to watch. Oh, like, we've watched, like, the ones I wanted to.
You don't know what we're doing for New Year's either.
Well, yeah, because I don't know what the fuck you could have pulled out of your ass for that one.
There's still some stuff. But yeah, okay. Yeah, we are kind of getting to the bottom of the barrel for New Year's movies. Otherwise, you know, usual spiel. Check us out wherever you get your podcasts. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, other places on the internet. If you are checking us out on any of those more podcast-specific platforms, please give us a quick like or rating. That really helps us out with getting recommended to other people there. You could also recommend the podcast to a friend if you really want to help us out. Maybe prevent some disaster of like boredom from happening to that person.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's really helpful. Otherwise, you can check us out on YouTube, which, while not the best place for audio-only content, is really nice for showing us some support. You know, we can see your likes, subscriptions, and that really helps us out with motivation and stuff. It's super cool to see. Otherwise, YouTube does has a couple cool tools you might like. There's a search button, which lets you search key terms in all our videos. So in case you're looking for a movie title to see if we've covered it, that's an easy way to check that out. Or there's a bell button, which lets you get notified whenever we post something new. So in case we're posting something out of our usual format, such as our Christmas episode, Thanksgiving, stuff like that. Because we aren't always the best at telling you about that.
We try.
That being said, the big thing about YouTube is it's one of the two major places to communicate with us at. You can do that in the comment section of a specific video, or you can go over to Twitter, @BewareTheBoard, and go talk to Bob. Maybe tell him about stuff that's happened in the last 5 years that he's unaware of, or you know, just give him a headache.
I already have enough headaches as it is. I don't need more given for free from the audience. Like Ben said, check us out on Twitter, @BewareTheBoard. It's where we post updates about the show, information about the show. Basically, if there's anything you want to know about the show, it goes on our Twitter. On Mondays, I post a spoiler post for that week's worth of episodes, which is a hidden movie cover you can reveal, so you can watch the film before we do. So when we release the episodes, you don't get any spoilers, and we're being vague about stuff you know what we're talking about. Then on Fridays, or whatever other day an episode goes live, I always post a link to the episode wherever it goes up. So if you miss an upload, or whatever else went up, there's always a link on our Twitter. Last thing, we do short form content over on @BewareTheBoard on TikTok, and over on YouTube Shorts. So if you like short form content and want to support the show, check us out there, @BewareTheBoard on TikTok, and on YouTube Shorts. Ben.
Yes.
I think that's it.
Well, I got two things.
Oh.
First of all, we didn't read the tagline because you didn't remind me.
Oh, shit.
So it's in his mind, he has the power to see the future. In his hands, he has the power to change it.
Okay.
Which,
that's,
you know,
okay.
It's whatever.
It's fine.
The other thing is the thing we've been doing for a while now. Bob, have you posted the stuff yet?
That's a good question.
The memes?
No.
I gave you a lot of benefit of the doubt on the Thanksgiving episode that you'd do it by that one. So.
Yeah, so
as of recording this, he hasn't done it yet.
Yeah.
I know this is coming out after the Thanksgiving episode.
I meant to do that, yeah.
But hopefully it's up right now. because Bob promised on the Thanksgiving episode.
I didn't promise shit.
No, you did. You said, I'm going to post it before this episode comes out.
Well, that episode's not out.
I know. That's why I'm bringing it up. Just a casual reminder.
I have time. Anyway, that's it. We'll see you guys next week.